Welcome to the Underwater Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of underwater portrait photography, cinematography, and everything in between. With me, your host, Brett Stanley. Welcome back to the Underwater Podcast. And this week, I'm joined by underwater camera operator Braden Haggerty, a Canadian who's based in Vancouver. Braden has worked on shows like Batwoman, Altered Carbon, Power Rangers, and the recently cancelled Siren, a drama about mermaids with loads of underwater scenes. We chat about the process of shooting for TV, what she needs to keep in mind for the visual effects, and how training your stunt people for underwater can make the job go so much smoother. Okay, let's dive in. Braden, welcome to the Underwater Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So we are in Vancouver right now, right?
Yes.
And how is it up there? I mean, Canada has done pretty well at keeping things fairly safe up there, I think.
Yeah, we feel pretty good here in Vancouver about how we've flattened the curve. We have a doctor up here who's become actually infamous a bit, I think, down there as well, Dr. Bonnie Henry, and she's been very clear about the guidelines, and we've managed to pretty much follow them and keep our cases down. So being in the film industry, particularly Americans, I think have kind of been eyeballing Vancouver because we do have a good control of the situation up here. It's looking like it's pretty safe to go back, and some productions are back now.
That's really interesting.
Here in early July,
I was talking to some people, I don't know, probably 2 months ago, right in the middle of it, and it was basically like a race to see which country opens first to be able to start shooting again. I think it was, you know. So I feel like Canada might be the next one to pick up.
Well, Canada, but particularly British Columbia.
Right.
I think we've got a little bit better numbers than some of even the other provinces. So that were hit a bit harder in the beginning. Quebec had a hard time because their spring break was a couple of weeks earlier. So they were on spring break. People were on spring break running around in all these different places. So they got hit a little bit harder, things like that.
Oh, because they were out of the country kind of doing spring break stuff. Yeah.
Whereas we, you know, my family was going to go away for spring break. I was actually away myself, but my husband and my younger son were going to go to Los Angeles and actually canceled their trip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was good.
Because the guidelines were coming in by the time they were to leave. I was in Sri Lanka. And
when the lockdown happened?
Yeah, so I probably left a week before it would have been advised not to even go.
Oh, right.
And then came home actually on the date that I had planned to come back, actually 3 days early, because I had planned to go from Sri Lanka to Thailand, but my trip to Thailand was canceled while I was in Sri Lanka. But I mentioned Sri Lanka because we were there, we were swimming with blue whales. And so, yes, trying to get some photos. We only managed to see one blue whale and our trip got cut a bit short, but it was an amazing experience.
I almost wish you didn't bring it up because now I have to ask you about it, because blue whales, that must have been incredible. What was that?
It was incredible. And it's actually okay to ask me about it because it's a part of where I'd like my career to go. I would like to segue into a photography career on top of my underwater filmmaking career.
Yeah.
So this trip was sort of the first of a traveling away doing underwater photography. And it really made me realize that, yes, that is what I want to do. So I hope we open up again at some point, because myself and I call her my partner in crime. She does our underwater freediving training and she trains actors on the sets. Yeah. But she has done a lot of these trips. She's lived in Sri Lanka. She's lived in the Philippines. She's lived in Costa Rica. And she also wants to go and work on doing photo shoots around the world. So this was our first adventure. And it's definitely what I want to continue doing.
Wow. And so was that a trip to like more of a wildlife photography thing? Or did you have models as well?
This was just wildlife, but we will, in the future, we'll work on taking models with us. For example, we were talking about Siren earlier, and I'm sure that will come up, but the lead actress on Siren, Aileen Powell, she is someone that we definitely want to take on some of these trips and work with. She's kind of my underwater muse at this point. So she would be brilliant to bring on a trip like this and do photo shoots with her, free diving, because she's become an amazing free diver, free diving with wildlife, as well as just wildlife and as well as just the models. So we'll work on concepts and plan trips based around them.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And speaking of Siren, which I think is your current big project, I think you've been on this for, is this season three now that you're doing?
That's correct. We just finished, well, we finished season three. Season three just finished airing about a month ago.
Correct. Have you started filming season four yet? Or
we're not sure if season four is happening or not.
Yeah.
We're waiting to find out.
At the end of each season, are you usually waiting or is there always that kind of pregnant pause as to whether it's going to get renewed?
Sometimes as we're shooting the last episode, it's already known it's going to go again.
Yeah.
Siren has, I believe, we didn't find out till later on. It is a little bit later this time because if we were going to start shooting at the same time we did last year, it would have already been up and running, but it has not been canceled either. So we're all kind of crossing our fingers. And we'll see where it goes.
So Siren is pretty unique in that it's a TV show that has a lot of underwater scenes. The premise of the show is it's kind of like a, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like a little bit of a like a soap opera mixed with mermaid kind of mythology sort of stuff. Is that right?
I guess you could say that, yeah, because it sort of follows this relationship between a mermaid who comes to land and develops a close friendship with these two marine researchers who are land-based, but then they start to play around with crossing over cross-species, well, relationships, love relationships, as well as there's an injecting of blood of the mermaids into the humans and seeing what happens, and they develop some of the mermaid traits, and they sort of play with that idea.
So how did you get involved with that? Was that, I mean, I'm looking through your IMDb and you've been doing underwater for a long time in the TV world.
Well, what happens is there's very few underwater cinematographers in town. I'll go back a little bit. Back in the day, they used to bring in Americans often to do underwater, especially on the bigger features. But what happened is that over the years we've developed, there's a few of us in town, particularly in town, and as our skills are developed, people have become more comfortable with just using who's here. So there is competition, not a lot of competition, but there's very few opportunities. So often when you get a job, it's based on because you've worked with the people before, either the producers or the production manager or the director of photography, usually and particularly. So in my career, it's been, was in the case of Siren, I knew the producer. And when I found out who the producer was, I rang her up and said, you know, well, I fired her an email actually. And I said, hey, I hear you're doing Siren and it's got lots of underwater in it. And I just want to let you know I'm still doing underwater and I'd love to be considered for your underwater. And she goes, oh, okay. Well, she goes, oh, that'd be great. Give me a minute. And then she sent me an email back 10 minutes later saying that the DP was Brian Pearson. And I had just worked with Brian on Power Rangers. And she said that Brian was going to give you a ring anyways.
Right.
So often what happens is have you worked with the people? Do you know them? I have a good reputation and I worked with Brian before. I'd worked with Tracy before. She was the producer of the pilot for Siren. And so I got the pilot and stayed on for season 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. So it's of that show.
Is
that kind of a dream job in terms of the work?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's unprecedented for any show in Vancouver, I'm pretty sure, the amount of water that they did. First two seasons, what we would do is block shoot three episodes or two or three episodes of work on one day. So if they started shooting in August, they would plan a day in October to shoot the underwater for episodes 1, 3, and 4, say.
Right.
And they didn't have as many underwater sequences and they weren't as elaborate as they later became. So they did that for seasons 1 and 2. What they found is that their fan base requested more underwater. They wanted underwater in every episode for moving on.
Yeah.
So for season 3, they decided to go with a tank day every episode. So basically, I don't know if you worked on episodics before?
No, I've usually just done features and stuff, but
okay.
Feel free to explain.
Well, the format, which may be familiar, you may recognize when I say it, but an episodic will shoot on average, I'd say about 8 days per episode. There's some other ways of shooting now that have come in where they block shoot, but for in general, 8 days per episode. And then they might have a second unit day to pick up some things that they didn't get during those 8 days while the next episode has started. So on Siren season 3, we did 8 days and then they had a tank day. So every episode was 9 days, but that ninth day was not called Ninth Day. It was called Tank Day.
Right.
And that belonged to us, which is unheard of. Usually as a shooting a tank day, we were fighting with other aspects of shooting as well, which means that, you know, okay, well, you'll get Alex and Aileen, the main people in your tank day, you'll get them when we're finished with them on another set.
Right.
So it's harder for us to shoot. This way, they just, the priority was the tank. And that's just unheard of.
Yeah, having a dedicated day just to be able to shoot mm-hmm. those scenes. How did that change the way you worked? I assume it made things a lot easier and a lot less stressful.
What it meant was that it was a priority and it was important. So we had rehearsal days, which was a real treat. That's something that you usually only get in features.
Yeah.
I was invited to all of the production meetings where the whole script was discussed. So I'd have an idea of what was happening. In the rest of the shoot, you have much better access and communication with the rest of the crew. Props, special effects, grips, lighting, access to all those people so that I could give them my input on what we'd need in the water. And they had the, you know, as a respected crew member that they knew.
Right.
And they knew I knew what I was doing. So we just have that kind of mutual respect, even with the set, the art director. Great conversations with him that to make everything work together better.
Right.
So that we could build an underwater environment that could help everybody. And visual effects was key. That was heavy visual effects in Siren. All the mermaids had visual effects. The sets were visual effects. But there still had to be a conversation between special effects, visual effects, art direction, props, and the director and the DP, who was doing what and who was fitting what in. And I was able to be at all those meetings and help clarify. And so I would know what I had to do to assist in all that.
Yeah, it is quite heavy on the VFX. I think I watched some of the behind the scenes stuff and just seeing how they've composited all those amazing tails and the movement under the water. How is that to shoot? Like, is it fairly choreographed or are you chasing them through the water? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, you might've seen some of those clips on Joe Mendez's, if I said that right, Mendez's, Joe Mendez, as I mentioned before, the showrunner, he showed some of those clips of how they layered things. It was great. I'll just give him as an example because most of the episodes I did were with him.
Yeah.
He had a very clear vision of what he wanted to see. So where we started, and he even shows that in some of his layering of start to finish, we started with the storyboards. And what you do is you sit in a meeting and all those people I mentioned before are sitting in the meeting and we look at a storyboard and we go through, okay, that. So you have a mermaid swimming by a ship. Let's give that as an example.
Yeah.
So the mermaid we'll go, okay, well, her tail is VisFX. Is her hair will be real. You know, we go through these things. The rock, there's going to be a rock here in the background that she's going to come out from behind. So that's going to be VisFX. I can say then, VisFX, what do you need from me as structurally in the tank? And he'd say, well, I'd love to have, the rock is not too big, so we need something a little bit smaller, but it would be nice to have something that he can build around. And then the ship is going to be here and she's going to swim through a door and into the ship. So then, and we need to see a door for her to go into the ship. So then I know that I need to build in the tank with the aid of the grips, which is the rigging grips who are going to help me with scaffolding. And then my in-water grips, we're going to build a structure that's black and not too big, which will be the rock. And then we're going to build a frame that she can, you know, grab onto the edges and swim through, and then they'll build the ship around that. And that's the conversation with the special visual effects and grip and myself in terms of to get the director what they need.
Yeah. And I assume with that structure that you're building, it doesn't need to have any texture. It's just purely a reference for the VFX
exactly.
to replace.
Yeah. And sometimes preferably, it's black. Sometimes we'll ask, you know, do they want green tape so that they can see it better? A lot of it will go back to really you need to give visual effects what they need.
Yeah.
And then there'll be lighting will have some requests. Okay, well, if she's going into the ship and say they have like a light coming that's supposed to simulate sunlight coming from the surface.
Yeah.
So that light's coming down, but now that person is going into the ship. So lighting will request, okay, well, they go through that door. Can we have something over top that will be now over top of her
to flag that light,
blocking the light. Yeah, so we can see that the light changed on her as she went through the door.
Oh, interesting. So you've kind of got to think about all the aspects of what the end result is going to be to be able to give them the raw footage that's going to work.
Yeah, and then give that to VisFX. So it was very fun for me because I had to be really clear on what the shots were, which was great because Joe had these fantastic storyboards, very clear vision. And so then I'd have to build really the set out of scaffolding and frames and stuff like that. But I found it really fun because also my challenge was to go, okay, well, what other shots need these scaffoldings in these formats? Because we only had so much floor space in the tank and moving the scaffolding would take time. So ideally, is there another shot that needs this rock scaffolding built this way? And we can just move it a few feet, get that other shot, and then dismantle it and turn it into another kind of scaffolding for a different shot. So I had to think, what is a good order to shoot these things as well?
Yeah. Do you enjoy that kind of efficiency, like reusing those kind of things?
I do, absolutely.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun, and especially Siren episodes 9 and 10 got really heavy. They had a lot of heavy water and a lot of thinking about, you know, the main character goes into the hull of an airplane. Is it called a fuselage? The fuselage of an airplane. It's a swim around a locker, and another evil merman comes out from behind the locker, and he, you know, so we had to build the locker. We had to build a place for the evil mermaid to stand on behind the locker.
Yeah.
But yet still have a corridor for the main actor to swim down. And then they have a little fight and the actor shoots him. And then inside this fake locker, there's a little girl and her hand's going to come through the cage of the locker and all these elements. And I have to visualize how we're going to build that underwater. Sometimes I have to say with that one, sometimes I'd get lucky because, you know, something would change and okay, well, we've got the little girl here now, so we're going to actually go to this shot first. And
right.
So I'd have to quickly go, what am I going to do with the scaffolding? How am I going to build the locker? How am I going to get that right height? Because the little girl has to be higher in the water column. And so I'd have to on the fly restructure how the day's going to go and how these elements are going to fit as quickly as I can.
Right.
Anyway, I remember one time going to the rigging grips who are outside the tank, but they would build scaffolding for us and then lift it up on chains and fly up. They're on the outside of the tank, pull it up on chains, drag it over the top of the tank and then lower it into the tank.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a production.
Yeah.
But I remember going, oh my gosh, I need an extra foot on this scaffolding. I need to be a foot higher. I'm a foot too low or something. And then they'd go like this and point at this. I remember them pointing at something and I was like, oh wait, no, that's exactly what I need right there. And they just by fluke had it.
So, oh, nice.
You know, as you get more experience, you kind of get lucky with how things will fall into place for you.
Yeah.
And I think it's because you've looked so far ahead and planned for every scenario. Sometimes when things change, it without even knowing it, it's there for you anyways, because you've done so much prep and looked at every aspect, things fall into place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all that preparation sets you up for success, I think.
That's exactly it. You've worded it perfectly.
Is the sort of prep you're doing on Siren, is it more intense than you've done on other shows just because you've got this whole day to shoot? Or is there more prep on shows where you're a bit more unscheduled, I guess?
I mean, you can go from as simple as I can just show up with a little camera. I don't even need tanks because I can hold my breath and somebody's going to fall in the water and then we're going to watch them and their feet swim away. I'm in a swimming pool. I can stand to do my shots.
Yeah.
That's a really simple. And then other times, Power Rangers, for example, we had 5 actors and 5 stunt people doubling them.
Oh, right.
There was a lot of people who did not have a lot of water experience. It was sort of a bigger challenging sequence with a lot of swimming to the bottom of a 16-foot tank, which has its own challenges, which will be interesting to go over.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of rehearsals. We had rehearsals in a pool just to get water comfortable. And then we'd have rehearsals actually practicing the actual swimming that we were going to be doing in still a pool. And we did a previs, you know, swim to actual just in the swimming pool, the actions that the actors would be doing so that we could kind of show the director.
Yeah.
And then you'll have rehearsals in the tank so that the, you know, going from a brightly lit swimming pool to a darkly lit tank is yet a whole nother thing for talent. And the more water time they have, the more comfortable they are. So Siren was on the more intense end, because as with Power Rangers, we would often have 5, 6, I think sometimes even more actors,
right,
who are also then being doubled by each one would have a double. So we would have to spend time choreographing. So should I go into that, some of those layers of prep?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about the layers of prep that you're doing for something that's involved like that, then, you know, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Well, let's use Power Rangers as an example, because we've talked a lot about Siren. But in Power Rangers, and this is where we started, especially doing this, a way of preparing. But so there's a friend of mine who's a free diver, and she became a free diving instructor just before we were shooting Power Rangers. Her name's Roberta, and she just trained all the mermaids.
Right.
And a lot of your people who will be listening to this have probably already heard of Roberta. Anyway, where we start is we take the actors and we have to train them for, one, to be on scuba. There's some limitations on scuba, but anybody who's going to end up being on a scuba underwater to a scuba diving equipment underwater has to go over scuba with an occupational diver who will also be their safety diver on the day. So we go to a pool to do that, as well as we do some, practicing breath hold and being comfortable with breath hold, equalizing and just swimming. How do they swim? And Roberta goes over a lot of that with them.
Right.
The biggest challenge, funnily enough, in a tank situation are eyes, ears, and nose. Eyes, because they don't wear goggles when they're underwater, as well as getting used to the water stings the eyes. So there's managing that. Nose is just getting water in your nose. So that's like, once you're upside down, water's going in your nose. So I know one person who is fully comfortable with that, but there's not a lot. I use her a lot in underwater, and she was a stunt double in Siren.
Right.
And then there's ears. So you have to equalize. And the biggest equalizations happen at the shallowest areas, because those are the biggest changes in pressure.
Yeah.
So it's all about eyes, ears, nose. So we do a lot of pool training, and we had a lot of pool sessions with both the actors and the stunt doubles on Power Rangers before we went into the tank.
How long do you tend to spend with that amount of people? Is that a whole day or half a day or?
Yeah. Well, there'll be about three to four hour sessions.
Yeah.
Because that's, then you're tired, but we try to do more than one. So I think with Power Rangers, there was about 3 pool sessions, and then I think we had a day rehearsal in the tank as well. Siren, we would have a day rehearsal for every tank day that we had. We would try to go, and we would shoot we would shoot it so that we could show the director and we could get sort of changes from him or her. A lot of female directors on Siren, which was nice.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So that we could make adjustments for that before the shoot day.
Right.
Not so much on Power Rangers. Power Rangers was just a lot of swimming. It was a lot of all the actors swimming through the water, swimming down through the water. So that was, really getting the equalizing happening and things like that. Nobody really was on scuba in Power Rangers in the end. But in Siren, we would do a lot of mix of people just doing breath hold for their shots and also going down on scuba. You take the scuba out, you take the regulator out, do your acting. This is especially for close-ups,
yeah,
where they weren't really swimming a lot. And then put the regulator back in, breathe up a little bit more, and then take the regulator out again and do. So we could do multiple takes without people having to come up and down.
Yeah, yeah. So it would save you a lot of time.
Yeah, I hope that's clear the way I'm describing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you've got a mix of people who are just doing scenes swimming from the surface down on one breath, and
yes,
other scenes where they're sitting with a safety diver, whether on scaffold or holding onto the diver,
yes,
and breathing as such. And then when they're, yes, ready to do their shot, they take the reg out and move, and then,
yes, you
know, when their talent signals to breathe again, they come back in.
Yes. You're set. You don't need to train. You're ready to do it.
Yeah.
But you're right. They would signal. They put their hand up to their mouth, 2 fingers to their mouth, and they give a very distinct signal that they're ready for their air, and their safety diver swims back in.
Yeah.
Siren was mostly breath hold. We prefer to use the breath hold because then you can just be anywhere in the water column, and as well as they were always moving in Siren. So we definitely had a rehearsal day for each episode where we would go through the more complicated maneuvers.
Yeah.
Aileen Powell, who was the lead, did the most of the swimming, was amazing in the water right from the beginning. I mean, she got a little bit ahead of everybody because she had the most training in the beginning.
Right.
We did a lot of pool sessions, and her training actually started, she came over from, I believe it was London, where she was living at the time, even though she's Belgian, but I believe she was living in London at the time when she first was approached to do the show, because Roberta has connections all over the world for freediving. So she connected with a freediver in London, and Aileen actually started her training in London with this woman.
Yeah.
Then she came to Vancouver, and there was several more pool sessions. And then she was in the water, and she was amazing from the beginning.
That's great.
She made it easy for me because she was easy to follow, very fluid. She was really good at maintaining her level in the water column. So it was a really special experience for me being able to work with her.
Yeah. From shooting with Siren and from shooting with these people in the water and maybe moving in different ways than you're used to on other shows, do you find that you're shooting it in a different way? Are you learning different ways to move that camera through the water?
Yeah, that's a good question. I found, as I've looked through the photos, if you go to my website, you'll see photos of me on various shoots. And I've noticed that I've gone from, that my gear has changed. The gear that's on my body has changed.
Right.
So I've gone from wearing a BCD for a lot of my shooting too. I've taken the BCD off, and I swim without the BCD through the water now. It's just too bulky and cumbersome. It's made the task for I have a woman and a guy who take turns gripping for me underwater, and they manage my hoses.
Yeah.
So now that I work off of a long hose. So they do a lot of swimming around with not only a video cable for the camera that goes to the surface, but now my long hose as well. And swimming my tank around.
Right.
So we're all getting a really good workout.
Yeah.
And they've been fabulous at not, I don't know how hard they've been working until I look back and look at them and they're like scrambling around and
yeah.
trying to keep my regulator in my mouth. So, you know,
right.
and caught up with me and this cable that's cumbersome as we swim, you know, all the way across the tank chasing a mermaid.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting thing because when you're shooting, when you're operating, you're so into that monitor and, you know, peripheral
yeah.
vision that you don't know all the other stuff that's happening behind you to keep you running and to keep you, you know, keep the area clear for you to get through. And as you say, to keep
yes.
regulators and stuff in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been fun. We all get a good workout, but so that has been a fundamental change in the way I shoot. And now I just tend to never have the BCD and just be so often in the past, if there was the shot descriptions, they were smaller sequences. Sirens had a lot more sequences, and they would be, you know, the car goes in the water and then the person comes out and looks around and sees if it's safe to swim back up. And a lot of the time I would be able to stand and I'd be able to move with people. I'd be able to walk. I'd be able to put a scaffold and be able to stand on it to shoot.
Yeah.
Now I just, if I can get a scaffolding in there, I do, but I'm prepared at all times to just float in the water.
Right.
And hold the shot. Sometimes it would be nice to be a little bit more stable. And often when that's necessary, we can get something in there. But because so much of it has been moving, I just kind of went, okay, I'm going to have to get really good at this, holding a tight shot while I'm floating. And with Siren, we've got so much practice with the rehearsals and everything. It's
yeah.
it's worked out really well. And there's one shot where I really went like, yeah, this is the way I'm going to do this from now on. That worked out really well is the lead actor. And it was, I think it was season two, might have been season one, but the lead played by Alex Rowe, he plays his character, Ben, he has to dive into the water and swim under the hull of a ship and get dislodged something from the fin or the keel or whatever,
right.
the rudder.
Yeah.
And he has to swim under, he dives under and I have to follow him. He looks around, then he swims forward and I have to back up with him and go all the way up to, and then come up a bit in the water to this fin thing. And then he releases the fin and he swims out. And it was, I think it was that sequence was the one where I really went, oh, this swimming around with them like this is really kind of fun. And I got ditched the backpack by then. I think that was the one where I really moved to that mode. The nice thing too, is we use this housing from this company called Hydroflex.
Yeah.
And they put all their cameras it fits a number of different cameras. But one of these cameras is much smaller than the actual housing. And so I called up Pete Romano, and he started Hydroflex, and he shoots everything with his housings.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm sure he has this beautiful housing that no one else uses, and it is perfectly trimmed for him. It's all about trim.
Yeah.
And keeping balance in the water column with the way you've put things on your body and the way you have things on the housing. And I gave him a call and I said, hey, are you ever thinking about making the housing a little bit smaller to fit for the Alexa Mini, which is used a lot in the housing? And we had a conversation about trimming out the housing. And he said, well, no, it's actually worked fine for him. It's a lot of work to change everything on those housings. And he says, I've just, you know, trimmed everything out and find that it works really well for me in the water as is.
Yeah.
And I just kind of took that to heart. And as we've had so many more days in the water, we've really come to it, trimming the housing to the point where it just sits completely neutral in the water, but we can do it really quickly. And so I've always wanted to achieve that, but sometimes it's like, we got to get in the water. We haven't had a rehearsal day, so we haven't been able to trim the housing out yet. We got a new lens in there. The weighting is different.
Yeah.
But with Siren, we had the time to really trim it out. And now when we go to the other shows where we don't have the time, we're able to trim it out before it even hits the water. Like often it goes in the water. I say to my assistant, Kim McNaughton, who does most of the work with me, I'll say, it's perfect. It's good. I'm good to go.
Yeah.
And so just because we've had the time now. So with that and trimming my body with not having the BCD and, you know, I've even changed my weight belt that I wear actually. It's easy to do what I'm trying to do, this swimming around. And so I've streamlined myself. I took the conversation with him and went, oh, okay. And I looked at the housing differently. And now I actually like using that Hydroflex because it is a little bit bulkier. Sometimes you want to get in a smaller corner and that's a little bit more challenging, but the size of the housing works for me.
Yeah.
And it gives me a little bit more push, like something to push against the water with, if that makes sense, but yet it's still neutral. So it doesn't have the weight, but it does have, you're still pushing something through the water.
Yeah. Like a little bit of inertia to it. Like it's got a little bit of resistance a little bit.
Yes. Resistance is a good word for it, which works for me. So when I go to my smaller format camera, which is a Sony a7S II system, mirrorless. So it's much smaller.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm on a little bit like I'm on ice now. I don't feel like I have that same control.
Oh, absolutely.
As I do with the bigger housing. And I actually had a conversation with Pete. We're two or three years later from that conversation when he talked about how he trims a housing and he likes the bigger housing. And we talked about those two things, about how it's much more, you feel like you're much more in control of that bigger housing.
So from my experience, because I've used that Hydroflex housing quite a bit, and going from that to the smaller housings, to me, it's like having a fluid head on a tripod where you've got this resistance and it helps you to slide into a movement because it's this little bit of resistance helps you to control the movement.
Yeah.
Whereas the smaller housing, like you're saying, you're on ice and every movement is almost exaggerated to the point where it feels a little out of control.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we don't say that it's out of control because we're always in control.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's not as it's a nicer feel.
Yeah.
It's definitely a nicer feel. It's like having a sloppy fluid head as to a nice when you've trimmed your friction.
Exactly.
Settings on your on the head. That's what it would equate to. Yeah.
So you were using, so you're saying you were wearing a BCD. Were you with tanks on your back as well? And now you've moved to a hookah setup?
Yeah, hookah, but the tank's sitting on the bottom of the pool.
Right.
And I just have a long hose, but essentially that's what it would sort of look like.
Yeah. So then are you on like a 20-foot hose or something?
20 or 30, yeah.
Okay.
I like the 20. The 30 is good if I've got to go a long ways, but the 20 is a little bit more manageable.
Yeah. And so that's just giving you so much more room to move and less drag in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing too is, you know, we are in a 48-foot diameter tank that's 16 feet deep. That's the most common that we get tank when we're on a show and we're like, give yourselves a little bit of room, you guys. And they'll go for 48. It's hard to get a 60-foot tank. Power Rangers, we had the 60-foot tank. That was brilliant. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
But with that 48 feet, we want to maximize every foot because it gets small fast. So when I was talking about putting the scaffolding in, you put we allowed ourselves a 10 by 10 scaffold that we put in and out a lot. So when we were working with stunt performers, we can take them to the bottom of the tank, the 15 foot depth. We're allowed to take them to a 15 foot. But when we're have talent in there, and if people don't have their paddy, then we have a 7 foot depth. So we'll put them on. If we need to have people on scuba, what we would do is we bring down a couple mermaids and drop them onto the 10 by 10 platform that's up 10 feet, putting them in that 7 foot range.
Right.
But as soon as you put that 10 by 10 platform in there, your tank just shrinks so much. The underwater grip that I work with, who's a rig and grip background, his name's Herb DeWall, and he's done a bulk of the work up here and the rigging and setting up of the tank. He's invaluable to me. So we also need to have steps for people to come in and out of the tank. And we used to actually have steps that would go to the bottom of the tank, set up on another scaffolding system.
Yeah.
That would take a big chunk. So now we got a 48 foot diameter. I like to use right under where we get in and out of the water as my back wall and look out at my set, 270 degrees out, looking away from that area.
To give you the most space.
To give me the most space. But if I've got those steps there, I've lost 5 feet.
Right.
So what we designed on Siren to maximize is he made benches that were up high. So now the benches were probably at the 10-foot mark. So when you stood on it, you had 5 feet, or maybe a little bit higher. So the benches allowed for somebody to stand on a bench and have their head out of the water, shoulders out of the water. So it's probably 4.5 feet, let's say, from the surface. And then underneath, nothing. So he built the benches from the top down.
Right. So they're hanging off the edge of the water.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're so good at finding my words for me. Thank you.
That's all right.
You're right. Exactly. Hanging, suspended from the top. And then I added my 5 feet at the bottom, and it felt like the tank became a 60-foot tank.
Oh, it gave you that much more space.
We won't tell producers that it's a 60-foot tank because we still want a 60-foot tank.
That's right.
But it added all this space. So for seasons 2 and 3, we had this much bigger floor space. So now we try to build that whenever we can.
Yeah.
Which is great. Because sometimes, we did Batwoman. The last few years, we've had a lot of really good shows. We did Batwoman. And in Batwoman, I believe we had a 36-foot tank.
Oh, okay.
And we had an armored car in it. And we have two characters being blown out of the water. But I think we did have to have we didn't have the bench, actually. So as soon as we all I could have was one scaffolding. And so if we needed scaffolding for people to get in and out and we needed scaffolding in the middle, I said, we're going to have to share. There's no way we can have two towers in because the tank's just too small.
Yeah.
So ideally we'll just, every time we can, we get enough prep, we're going to get the bench system.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's an efficient way of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to, describe. Sometimes it's very challenging to describe what's going on underwater to the people on the surface.
Yeah.
We're getting better at it because we're, doing it more, but there's always a unique set of challenges, but underwater is just so beautiful that people, I think they end up mostly with something they like.
Yeah.
The Batwoman was really fun because the actual van was real. I didn't have to fake it with scaffolding.
Yeah.
So we got to be inside the van. The lighting was different because I'm trying to think of the name of the DP. It was fun because it was night. He was using creative lighting because there was police up top. The van had the headlights were still on, and he'd put a light panel inside the van on the roof.
Yeah.
And that was lighting inside the van. And it was an armored car type thing, right? It was
prisoner transport.
Yeah, prisoner transport vehicle.
Yeah.
And they're taking one of the lead actresses is being transported in this vehicle. And Batwoman goes into the water and Batwoman comes in and cuts a hole in the side of it and drags this character out.
Right.
So, and then they both get blown out of the water. So they actually got ratcheted out of the water, which was really fun as well.
So they actually flew through the surface of the water or across the tank?
They were standing facing each other and they each got blown out away. So they got blown to the surface.
Right.
So they weren't that deep under the water so that we could do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
No, you know what? They did it on breath hold. That's why. They went down. sunk down, 3, 2, 1, and then they get blown up because you don't want to go, you know, when you're, you don't want to be on scuba and move that quickly to the surface, right?
No, yeah, because
as you,
air,
as you know,
the air will expand, so that, and dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. So we had them on breath hold. So we've been doing a lot of, okay, what shots are going to be breath hold? What are going to be scuba, depending on what the action's going to be? So we, a lot of those conversations. And so we had a lot of conversations about how to set that up and decided that breath hold was going to be the best.
Yeah.
We had Yvette Gonda was playing, doubling for Batwoman, and Lisa Chandler, who's the woman who can go upside down and all kinds of water can go in her nose.
Yeah.
They're some of our go-to underwater stunt performers.
Yeah.
And they've been training and practicing for it. And they play, they doubled the characters.
Right.
And it was nice because I requested to the stunt coordinator. He already had one lined up and I said, can we request it? And it's nice because they'll listen to us sometimes when we request these people. Anyways, yeah. they did it. So they were okay to do the breath hold because that they've been training for it.
Right. Is there something that you have to plan in terms of mixing breath hold and scuba within a day? Do you need to do them in a certain order, or does the decompression residuals not really matter between the two?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, because we're in a 16-foot tank and the talent is never deeper than 15 feet.
Yeah.
I say a 16-foot tank, but the water level's not right to the surface, right, so that we stay within our guidelines. We can be there for 3 days, but by the occupational diving standards, there's no, it kind of, it's a sort of infinity,
right,
in terms of how long we're ever going to shoot. So no, we just go back and forth as per the shots required.
Okay. Yeah. So you don't need to take it into consideration.
Yeah. And you know, we take into consideration things like, okay, this is an intense scene. People are not going to be thinking about breathe out. So we're going to do it on breath hold. And we will, you know, sometimes have to really, you know, explain like, no, this is not going to be happening on breath hold. Nobody's to change that. Or this will be happening on breath hold.
Yeah.
Nobody's to change that. Or no, this is better on a regulator. This certain performer, whether they're an actor or a stunt person, is good. It is very, very competent. And we're not worried about them holding their breath or not. We manage to sometimes be able to use some of the occupational divers as the doubles. And then we're worrying even less about what they're going to do. So you're taking into consideration the shot, what needs to happen in it, the depth that it needs to happen at, and then who's doing it.
Yeah. And so I'll just explain this because for people at home, and the difference between doing a breath hold shot and doing a scuba shot is that when you're on a breath hold, you take a lung full of air and you go to the bottom of the tank, say, and then you come back up again with that same amount of air in your lungs. Whereas if you're on scuba, you'll go to the bottom of the tank and you'll take in a breath of compressed air, which if you hold that in your lungs and you rise up, your lungs will expand like it's a balloon, which can cause quite a lot of damage. So as you come up from the bottom on scuba, you need to breathe out that excess air so that your lungs don't expand and you get an embolism. So that's the difference between the breath hold.
It's interesting the scuba. Too, because lots of people like to go, oh, free diving, it's so dangerous, or scuba, it's so dangerous. You do these dangerous sports, and they're not really. If you're doing them properly, it's like anything. Walking across the street can be dangerous if you do it not looking, you know? So all of these things are safe if you stay within your protocols. And the interesting thing about scuba diving is most people think deep and all these things. Same with free diving. And your biggest problems can happen actually right at the surface if you're not paying attention, like you're saying.
Yeah, and I think statistically that's where most of the issues happen, is in that first, 10, 15 feet.
Yeah. So we're good. We always have a safety diver per person. We work everything out. It's funny because I've also worked as a safety diver. And so even when I'm behind the camera, my mama instincts are always there. Like I want to reach out and grab somebody.
Yeah.
I'm sure the safety divers are just get out of here and get back behind again. Yeah. It's hard to leave you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's part of it. You know, it's your everyday. It's when you're underwater that you're thinking in the back of your mind all that safety stuff, because that's what's keeping
absolutely.
You alive.
Absolutely, as well as being, I like to sort of work as an underwater unit coordinator, you know, getting all the departments together, which means you're high on the supervisor list. I am considered on, especially a show like Siren, head of that department. I'd be considered head of underwater department. And that puts you, you're responsible like a supervisor. So if something happens, and I don't mean I don't want anything to happen because I'm going to be held responsible, but I am in the position of being a responsible person and making sure that nothing does happen. So
yeah, you're responsible because you don't want anything to happen.
Yeah.
Not the other way around.
And I am legally too.
Yeah.
I enjoy that responsibility. That's what makes the job more interesting.
Yeah. Yep. So how did you even get into underwater? Was water something that you grew up with, or was it something you found later in life?
Yeah, I know. As a kid, I loved being in the water, which sounds so corny and, you know, but it's true. So I remember, my memory's not the best, but I do remember when I was born in Regina, Saskatchewan, and we had a swimming pool in our backyard. And my mom, who didn't swim, made sure that my sister and I knew how. So we had the YWCA lessons as kids in Regina and swam in the pool in the winter and then swam in our backyard pool, part of our condominium complex outdoor pool in the summers. And then when I moved to Vancouver, where I've been since I was 12, my best friend and I, we loved going to the swimming pool in the UBC Aquatic Center, which just got torn down about 2 or 3 years ago and it's been rebuilt. Well, we were there opening. I recall being there opening day. Maybe that's just my memory, but that's what we did for fun. We went to the swimming pool and hung out in the water. So when I got older, I thought, well, I'll try out this scuba diving thing. And I don't know why I thought that, because I did it by myself. I was 21, I think, when I took my lesson. So I got my scuba diving certificate. Early days of it, I had troubles equalizing. And I thought, I'll never really be able to equalize. So we'll see what happens with this. But didn't do a lot of diving here. So I didn't really dive for a while. Then when I went to film school, I did a bunch of things with school and eventually landed deciding I liked taking photos and ended up at film school at Concordia. And while I was there, I ended up working in the equipment room. And so a lot of people, I knew the cameras and how to work them, which back in the day of film, right, that was the precious. Loading and unloading that film was this precious thing that everybody was scared of doing, but I knew how to do it. So I went out on a lot of shoots in the camera department in helping us, particularly helping assist. Anyways, while I was at school, there was the NFB, the National Film Board, which is I don't really hear about them so much anymore, but it's well known up here in Canada. Nanook of the North came out of the NFB years and years ago, famous documentaries. They were doing a series called the Anti-Racism Series. And my cinematography teacher gave my name to them and said, you know, maybe Braden would like to come out. And since I was in photography, I ended up shadowing the DP, Zoe. And when I was working with Zoe, she was a DP, for whatever reason, I wouldn't mind doing underwater. I don't even know. I don't remember watching Flipper and liking underwater. It doesn't go back to kid days or anything, but I must have seen something that made me go, underwater would be neat.
What a time frame is that?
This is 1989, 1990.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Now we're dating me, my age.
Sorry.
Anyways, no, it's okay. It's all good. I am what I am. Yeah. Anyways, I was in Montreal at the time. That's where Concordia is. And she said, well, when you head back to Vancouver, look up a woman. Her name's Pauline Heaton. She runs a company called Water Visions. She was doing underwater out here. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back, that's what I did. I started working out at her company and learning about the cameras. I was doing mostly assisting stuff. I got in the water a little bit. We were in shallow pools, so equalizing was never an issue. Because I guess back in the day with film, we focused in the water.
Yeah.
Did you ever use those systems where you were?
I haven't used them, but I've spoken to people and they're, you know, you're pulling focus on the actual housing itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was interesting. It's all changed with the system, as you know, the Mark V, the Hydroflex housing we're using now. Everything is cable up to the surface, focus, iris, zoom. I wish I could use the zoom. That's the only thing I miss. You got to go up and talk about, well, let's push in as opposed to, or let's zoom in as opposed to pushing in, because, you know, we want that feeling. We don't want the wide close. We want a little bit of distance, or, you know, so you have to go up and talk about it. Anyways, so then I guess when I ended up getting back in the water was Pauline had a gig and we shot a demo for Kodak in Hawaii. And because I have a darker skin color and another girl that was working with us had a lighter skin tone, Pauline wanted to have both of us swimming in shots with manta rays and whatever else it was so that we could see how the film stock. It was a demo for the 250 daylight. Remember that way back. And so I went, okay, I'll do that. And I knew as we were flying to Hawaii that I was going to have to equalize my ears. And I was just like, it's going to work. It's going to work. And sure, it was all fine. And then since then, I've just been back in the water. That was 97. So there's quite a gap. I had already started shooting a bit on my own, some of the tank jobs in town.
Yeah.
But that's where I started, was out with this woman learning the tricks of the trade and then slowly moving into shooting my own stuff.
Was it very hard for you to get that kind of first step into the industry? Like, was she reluctant to take you on, or was she kind of welcoming you in?
No, she was very welcoming. She was great. She's very much about sharing information, teaching people, giving them the experience behind the camera, shooting as well. She was really good that way. And then as well as working with her, because there's not enough underwater to just do that, I also was able to get into the union as a second camera assistant. Yeah. So was meeting people in the world that I work, which I call Hollywood North, because most of what we work on are Hollywood productions. So I was also making my own connections at the time as well there. One of the cinematographers that I work with a lot, his name's Rob McLaughlin. But the very first trainee gig I had was Rob McLaughlin was the DP.
Yeah.
And then I ended up working on a show for him as a second camera assistant. He was DPing called Millennium. And then he gave me a couple of jobs. Millennium happened to have a few underwater shoots. So I did those as an operator, and I think that slowly started. So there was still Pauline. There was another fellow named Rick Mason. There's another fellow named Ian Seabrook, and myself, all sort of shooting. Ian and I did a lot of assisting too in the early days, but also shooting. And then Pete Romano might come up. Pete Zuccherini might come up. I mean, there's lots of competition, but I would just, you know, I would try to get on as assistant or a safety diver, and you're always learning, you know, you work with these other people, but you learn every time you're in the water. You might not necessarily learning what they're doing, how does Pete shoot? Because I have my own ways that I shoot. But you also learn about underwater situations, you know, you cannot put a tree in the water. And sometimes they try to put a tree in the water. So let's make sure when I'm coordinating an underwater thing, I know who's doing set deck. And, what are you guys planning on putting in there? Is it going to rust? Is it going to fall apart? Because you've been on all these sets.
Yeah.
How did it work with the talent? How does it work with safety? There's so many things to learn every time you're on set. My background as a safety diver has been so valuable to me as a shooter, because I understand what safety needs. I understand how to read talent when they're in the water, whether they're a stunt performer or not. You know, not just because they're a stunt performer doesn't mean they can go from A to B and back again a million times. You know, they're doubling somebody and they're a good double, but is their breath hold good? Are they comfortable on scuba? And I can make adjustments knowing, that's who's stunt doubling. We can do whatever you want. That's who's stunt doubling. We've got to make some other adjustments. You make them ahead of time.
Yeah.
Production's aware. It's all good. But if you show up on the day and you're not aware of things, that's when you get into trouble.
So if you're on a production and you've got all this experience, you know all these different techniques and how to work in the water, if you're not fully on the production, if you're just coming in for a day or a couple of shoots here and there, are people like the set decorators and the art department, are they deferring to you, or do you kind of have to go and give them some information?
That's a good question too, because I've been in the industry for so long and I know so many people, especially because as we were talking before, I've done stunts, I've done stand-in, I've been extra, I've worked in the camera department for years, and camera department gets to know a lot of people. And now that I have the time behind me underwater and a very respectful career, I find that for most productions, if they have questions, they will ask. There's a good relationship. Yeah. Taking a set deck, for example, you know, will they defer to me or ask questions? We did a project a couple of years ago called Somewhere Between, and they were building a very elaborate set in the water. And because I was part of the production meeting, because the underwater was more complicated, I got to meet set deck there and I got to voice some of my concerns in the production meeting, and they got to say what they were doing. And I was like, I can find out where you get the best underwater plastic algae, or, you know, when you get stuff, do you guys mind showing me? And they're like, that would be fantastic. And they were all over collaborating, and not so much me telling them what to do, but letting me know what they were doing and did I think that would work. And so I when they were building the underwater set, you know, I would be in touch with the art director, and he'd say, can you come out on Monday at 3 and take a look and see what we're doing? And so I'd go out and we'd have discussions, and And we just both knew what, oh, that's perfect. I'll still be able to get scaffolding in, or, you know, these loose bits might not work so good, or, you know, it was great. So most of the time there's a good conversation that goes on.
Yeah. Because they want it to work as well. They want to be able to do a good job and have this whole thing happen, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. And some now have had a lot of experience in the water and some haven't. And if they haven't, they very much want to know, does this work? Does that not work? Yeah. Especially when we're going to use a foam such and such. And we'll be like, okay, you're going to need foam doesn't work so well because you need a lot of weight to keep foam down. And they'll be like, well, it's just a tiny rock. And it's like, you're going to need 300 pounds to keep your tiny rock underwater. And so a lot of those conversations are happening ahead of time. Right. And I found it's great. If you share information with people, if you respect their part of it and they will respect yours. And so I have very conversations with people mutually. And I find that they want to engage. They're interested in underwater. They want to know how it works. And they're so happy to help you get something that works for both them and you. And I'm happy that, you know, SetDeck has, they've got things that they have to be able to see in there too. And I respect that. I respect that. Nope. They want it here. They want it to be like this. Okay. How can we make that work for camera and work for you? So if it's mutual respect, then it works. And I'm finding too, I feel, and it might be because my reputation is preceding me a little bit more now, I get that respect when I show up. I also feel like as we're moving into 2020, people are wanting to work. There's less of a macho attitude.
Yeah. People just want to get stuff done.
And they like, you know, I have to talk to the electrics. You know, I want to know exactly what's going on because I've been zapped in the water before. So I want to, you know, the conversations have got even deeper with electrics, and you might approach them and you're like, oh, hi, I'm Braden. I'm shooting underwater. And I just want to know what's happening with your electricity, where it's flowing. I'm going to ask you again every day to make sure we all know. And that if you've got new women or men in on your crew that they know, and even the old guys are, they're like, oh, okay, what do you need? And well, yeah, absolutely. We'll do it for you. If you get a little bit of a grouchy approach at first, it's easy if you just show respect that they'll back off.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really happen so much anymore.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I've got from doing all these podcast episodes with like Pete Romano and Ian Takahashi and all that is it's just respect.
Yeah. Ian Takahashi had approached me just earlier this year to do a little clip thing for Hydroflex.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think I saw that on their Instagram.
So I just heard of him about a month or two ago.
Yeah. He's a great guy. He's really nice. He's all about, you know, building up the industry and, you know, very much like Pete, we're very happy to share.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, people who want to keep it to themselves because they're worried that somebody else might take their job. I think in the long run, you'll do better sharing and being good at what you do than worrying that somebody else might know what you do and take it away from you. I think that's more the motto these days.
Well, I think the inclusiveness and the sharing, if you're someone who is open to people coming and asking questions or learning stuff from you, that gets around. And I think people then realize that you're an open person, that you're a nicer person.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're holding onto your secrets, you know, people kind of feel like, oh, they're a bit closed, so maybe not as approachable.
Yes, absolutely. And in the water, what we find, well, I do this stunt work as well, and so I have a good relationship with the stunt community. And over the past few years, I asked Roberta, who is the free diver, and she's also a cold water swimmer. I asked her if she could put a course together for stunt performers that's a cold water and breath hold course, so that they start coming. Being able to take jobs based on a little bit more knowledge and not jumping into cold water. And then the more you talk to stunt performers, you find out that cold water and breath hold are some of their worst memories.
Yeah.
So we're trying to share information and bring a community together that's, if somebody's got a cold water gig or a breath hold gig in the stunt community, they'll call either Roberta or myself and say, hey, look, we got this thing coming up. What do you think? And maybe that's as far as the conversation goes, or maybe they end up having Roberta come out on the day to help them. But we're happy to share the information, whether it means they walk away and don't need us or not. But the community that has developed around that is really nice, but also just even the curiosity. And so we are able to get more calls and maybe help make things safer because people are happy to talk to us about it.
Yeah.
So having that cold water for stunt performers and breath hold for stunt performers has a lot of stunt performers have come and taken it. I don't even know now when she's teaching it. Roberta's actually a really good friend of mine as well. And we've been doing some training during these lockdown days. We've been doing a lot of cold water swimming and getting in the water free diving more.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And so she's been off and she's like, oh yeah, I've been training this stunt performer and that child. I'm like, oh, when did you do that? And it's great. So now when we have an underwater gig, you know, and we're working with a certain stunt coordinator who has to hire these people, they'll ask us, well, who do you think would be good for this gig? And Roberta's already seen them in the water. So sometimes we don't even have to do the pool training with them because we already know that they can do it. So we can also save some time.
Mm-hmm. And that makes your job a lot easier as well, because you know what to expect. You know how to be able to work with them and kind of estimate your shots and stuff as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Braden, this has been amazing. It's been great to hear your story and just to hear how you're evolving from doing Siren and also the stunt side of things, changing the industry a little bit. So thanks very much for being able to share all this with everyone.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Yes. Yeah. Stay in touch.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, if you like the podcast, please subscribe. If you'd like to connect with us or just learn more about my guests, you can hit our website at theunderwaterpodcast.com or on Instagram or Facebook. Also check out our regular live streams on YouTube. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to know more about my underwater photography workshops and mentoring, you can find me at brettstanley.com. The Underwater Podcast is presented and produced by me, Brett Stanley, and our music is Neo by Oh Boy. Keep creating, everyone. I'll see you in the water.